It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every single game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. It's guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Stewart and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
B-Pod Studios.
This is WWE Superstar Roman Reigns, and you are listening to Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with James Stewart and Mike Riley, two great members of the Kowloon crew. Mike, remember, this is Jay Stu's yard, brother.
Mike Riley, just wanted to kind of start off by thanking our loyal listenership for downloading and listening to our silly little wrestling podcast in a time where the world is having its issues between a virus and protesters. So for the next 60 minutes or so, we'll be talking pro wrestling. And specifically where I want to start is Mike Tyson in All Elite Wrestling. So I think Mike Tyson had a rather lackluster appearance on AEW's pay-per-view where he handed Cody a belt just because Cody wanted the rub. But this past Wednesday night, while not a perfect in execution, the confrontation with Chris Jericho got me really excited for a potential Mike Tyson versus Chris Jericho match. That when they get in the ring, it'll likely suck, but the hype will be fun. And realistically, the Tyson Jericho match should be Tyson throws two punches and knocks out Chris Jericho. Mike, what do you think about Mike Tyson doing something more than just handing somebody a championship belt?
Yeah, well, like I said last week, I was really disappointed with him at the Double or Nothing pay-per-view. And Jericho even did say, he told our good friend Justin Barrasso, Sports Illustrated this weekend, that he and Mike Tyson should be unscripted. And that's the perfect formula here to see those two go at it. Be all natural. And sure, if he's willing to have Tyson knock him out, take a punch like a freaking champ, hell yeah, give me that. That's great. It's a great build up there. If Mike Tyson is to get back in the ring with UFC or boxing or whatever, no matter what, Jimmy, with nothing else going on and all the bad news happening out there, this could be good for the world of sports because Mike Tyson is that figure. He's a sports figure. He's a pop culture figure for that matter. And it's also huge for AEW. It's a perfect scenario for both sides there. And with nothing going on, bring attention to that with Mike Tyson back in the limelight. Couldn't have asked for a better time right now to bring him back to reality. Get us more on a realistic page here, and maybe that'll be the first step in the right direction for sports to return.
And there's a buzz. And if a Jericho Tyson match would happen, I assume it would be in Chicago in September, but they'd push that back to wherever they have their November pay-per-view. But there's going to be something with Tyson and Jericho. I just feel it. I think Tyson's going to do. I think Tyson's going to do the show this Wednesday night on TNT, which I think is already in the can. But there's a certain buzz around 53-year-old Mike Tyson, who is in great shape and is going to do something major. There's enough buzz from people that I talk to. There's Dana White, who's on the record saying that he knows that Mike Tyson is going to be doing something. Just my opinion, I think he's going to do a boxing match with Tyson Fury.
Yeah.
And I talked to Billy Lanny off the air. Billy Lanny is a huge boxing guy and he scoffs at it. And I understand that scoff because we didn't care about Tyson Fury versus Braun Strowman when they did it at a Saudi Arabia show. But Mike Tyson versus Tyson Fury will get a million pay-per-view buys because what if 53-year-old Mike Tyson, who's in great shape, lands one punch? He's the heavyweight boxing champion of the world. And because we're all a little bit older and we forget about how bad Mike Tyson was boxing in 2004 and 2005 because nobody was watching. We remember the 1988, 89, 90, 91, 92,
right.
Whether we actually saw the fights or they were mythical to us. We think of Mike Tyson as the baddest man on the planet.
Baddest
and
man.
That's what we think will happen if it's Tyson Fury.
Yeah. They want us to think that, but I would go with Tyson Fury on that. We'll have to bring Joe Murray in for the odds on that one, when and if it happens. In fact, the Tyson Fury Deontay Wilder boxing match back on February 22nd, which feels like it was a million years ago, but it was only three, 4 months ago now at this point, back when the world was a little normal. It had between 800 and 850,000 buys. But the problem is why it was kind of a low number from what they expected, the streaming and, you know, jumping onto social media, tapping into that. But you know this, Jimmy, if it is to be Mike Tyson and Tyson Fury, 100% right, million buys, that's huge revenue, HBO, Showtime, whatever, whoever's going to pick it up, tremendous formula for whatever they do. And absolutely, with nothing going on, I mean, they couldn't have asked for better time to have the world watching Tyson Fury and Mike Tyson. Look at last week with the golf with Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods. You have those big names there. You have two big names like this with nothing else. Home run.
So the AEW pay-per-view buy rate was up 13% from February 29th. AEW's ratings, as were NXT's, were up this week. So
yep,
Mike Tyson is good for business, at least in short dosage. And once again, like, I think he'll get smoked in a boxing ring, but you'll get my $100.
Absolutely.
You'll get my pay-per-view buy. I'll watch it.
He'll take it.
Or I'll find an illegal stream and watch it that way, but I'll watch it.
Yeah, absolutely. It. Yeah, I mean, it's a numbers game. It's all it is.
It absolutely is. The other big thing, I think, from AEW was FTR finally made their debut. Mm-hmm. They confronted the Young Bucks, which this is now the thing in AEW is you show up in a black pickup truck and you run into the ring and FTR beat up Butcher and Blade. And then they had their thing with the Young Bucks and they're going to do an interview with Tony Schiavone this week and explain themselves, probably saying the same things that they said on the Chris Jericho podcast a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. My only hope is that their work is closer to their NXT work rather than their SmackDown or Raw work. FTR will probably get the tag belts off of Paige and Omega, although I don't want that to happen because they should string out Omega and Adam Page's relationship with the Elite a little bit longer. And plus, I'm kind of out on the Revival. I'm sorry, FTR.
FTR.
So I don't want FTR to be near the tag belts, but if it goes Omega Page to FTR to the Young Bucks, I can live with that.
Yeah, and the Young Bucks, you know, they should have been the inaugural tag team champions, in my opinion, at least. But
no, Mike, you're right.
Well, thank you, Jimmy. I mean, I am. You know, but the FTR though, here's the thing: if they are to beat Kenny Omega and Paige, then I obviously wouldn't be shocked because they're newcomers and to stick it to the WWE, but it's just Kenny Omega. He's putting people over. He's there to put people over and to give them that, you know, they need the titles right away. But I'd love to see them feud with the Young Bucks for a little bit and maybe go to Omega and Paige in a few more months. But it's probably more likely going to happen. So on that note, you're right, Jimmy. You're right.
Yeah.
We can see it a mile away.
But you know what, though, Mike? The thing that I felt with AEW, and we've got an email of the week coming up.
Yeah, can't wait to talk about that.
I feel like even though sometimes we know the pitches that are coming,
mm-hmm.
we still like the execution of it. And I think that that's okay.
Yeah.
Like, dating back, you know, from to my youth, right?
Yep.
So when I really kind of was like fully like thinking of I don't want to say thinking critically about wrestling, but when I was thinking about wrestling, like the Mega Power story, right? Mm-hmm. Savage wins the title at WrestleMania 4. Hogan wins the title at WrestleMania 5.
Yep.
There wasn't a doubt in my mind that Hogan wasn't going to beat Savage at WrestleMania 5.
Yeah.
Because it was a big-time match. It was a championship match, and it was Hogan coming for revenge. And in that time, the good guy always won.
Right, right.
That was classic WWF booking. The good guy always won.
On the big stage.
On the important stage.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the last two WrestleManias, you've had that happen.
Right.
But that for a long time, since the Triple H win,
yeah,
was not the case, where there are times where you couldn't call it, or it was a mixed reaction, or
right,
you know, the whole Undertaker documentary, which, mm-hmm, I mean, you know, Roman Reigns beats the Undertaker, and that's the right move for long term, but right, that's not what that crowd wanted.
No,
they didn't want the loud part of the crowd did not want to see Roman Reigns against Undertaker.
And exactly. No, and you're talking to the number one guy right here who was furious about that for a few months. You know, you look at, I mean, thank God WrestleMania 17 was in Houston, Texas, because that was Stone Cold Steve Austin's stomping ground there. If that were not there, then that would be a disaster. You know,
but that finish was a disaster, because they were trying to turn Austin into a bad guy, and
it failed.
The crowd cheered because it's Austin's hometown, and that's everybody upset. Wants Austin to win. And
right, right. And then, you know, you also look at WrestleMania 2000. I thought that ending there, Triple H winning, that sucked. Trying to think of some other ones off the top for a while too.
Even the point is, like, and
yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, the point is that. Sometimes, even though you see the outcome coming, it's right, the execution of it. And if the execution is good, then you can live with knowing the result. We knew Roman Reigns was going to beat Undertaker. We did. It's just the execution of the match wasn't there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It
didn't work. It didn't work. And if that's how it's going to be here for the FTR to win the belts, and if they are going to do it, then it's fine. I'm okay with that. I have no issue with that. And if they're going to get them, the Young Bucks, if they're going to go for them eventually afterwards, then bring it on. Give me that. Give me more of that for a good title run between those two tag teams. JR, you know, teased it big time this week. He said we're in for a classic down the line, if that's the case right here. And they're really building up this tag team division. They've done that since day one. And now to have a tag team like FTR in there makes it even better.
I hate how they use the spike pile driver. That move is now Mike Bennett and Matt Davins. Called the Hail Mary, and it was executed so much better. And I know it was the Brainbusters finish back at WrestleMania 5. So I do know that, but you know, I play favorites to Taven and Bennett. What can I say?
No, well, they're local guys. You got to support them.
So I get this email.
Yeah.
This comes to us from Sid Diamond.
All right,
The email reads, I've really soured on AEW as a whole. I love Jericho, Sammy, MJF, and Darby Allin, but I'm just not into any of the EPs and their crappy YouTube show. The Bucks are the Rocker ripoffs, and the Rockers were never part of the echelon of tag teams because their promos were garbage. Cody is now clearly abusing power like his dad and is trying to recreate the old days of Jim Crockett Promotions. JCP had great talents, but at the end of the day, they could not take Southern wrestling out of the tiny arenas or studios. Why should anyone care about the Bucks or Omega? They are, quote, spot monkeys who are incapable of delivering anything but tongue-in-cheek promos. That said, I still enjoy Jericho, Sammy, Jungle Boy, MJF, and Darby. Mike Riley, your thoughts?
So I'm not in full agreement with Sid here, especially on the Cody thing. Let me start with that right there. And Cody, this past week on AEW, his promo spoke about, you know, his dad and even his mom at home too, and the Tom Brady thing and all that stuff. I don't think of Cody as a booker, more or less like his dad. I think of him more, and I know I may be contradicting myself here a little bit, modern day times, but I think of him more of like a Triple H, you know, an executive. But again, I think that he is really, he reinvented himself and he earned it. And I can't think of AEW. Obviously, you look at what he says there, the old days of Jim Crockett Promotions and everything. You know what? AEW is so fresh. It's so brand new. They're still trying to, invent themselves here, do the best they can, and, you know, put an image out there. Sure, you may have some parallels to Jim Crockett Promotions, but I can't see Cody abusing his power. I'm sorry.
100% I can.
Because if Mike,
he had a belt created for himself.
Yeah, but if he were abusing the power, he would have been the first AEW champion. He would have. But good for him.
Because everybody would have outed him for it.
Well, then, you know what? I disagree. Disagree.
He's a martyr for having the secondary title.
Good for him. And good for him. I think that's a great thing. I am so happy for Cody being the inaugural TNT champion. I could not think of a better guy than to be the inaugural TNT champion for AEW. I am a Cody Rhodes fan on that. Give me more Cody, baby, as a champion. No issue with that. But if he were actually the guy here to make the move there and make all these decisions, he would have been the first AEW champion. So that's where I'm going to part ways with him there. He does say, too, about the Rockers. What did he say about that? Let me read the thing here. The Bucks are Rocker ripoffs. Rockers never part of the upper echelon. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I'm not going to disagree with them there on that. But I just think the Bucks, they should have been the first AEW tag team champions, Jimmy. AEW dropped the ball on that. As a new promotion, they should have been the inaugural AEW tag team champions. They should have been. And you're building a new company. You're putting a profile out there. Not a lot of people that don't follow anything else outside the WWE. I'm not saying not a lot, but let me say there's a chunk of them that weren't fully aware of the Young Bucks. And for those of them that were not fully aware, that's where they dropped the ball. They should have put the belts on the Young Bucks. So that's where I can see the disinterest there. He may not be super interested in them because they're not at the top and they're there to put people over. So I'm going to agree with them on that. But the Cody thing, I strongly disagree with. Kenny Omega, yeah, he doesn't do much for me either.
Kenny Omega has disappointed in AEW.
Yeah, he hasn't done much for me.
And that's to say, he may have had his best match on AEW Dark when we were at BU.
Yeah, that was a great that no holds barred or the non-sanctioned match there. That was awesome. But
You know what? The Moxley match was good, but I think people eliminate that one because it was too gory for them.
But I
love violence, so I'm into it.
That's the only thing.
So Kenny Omega's two best matches in AEW were non-sanctioned, which means they don't actually count.
Well, yeah, exactly. And Sid should be watching the Dark match, the AEW After Dark, to see his best match now.
But as far as Cody goes, I don't know if I've said this on the podcast. You remember stuff that I and the audience listen.
Go ahead.
Remembers stuff. Yeah. Cody is the leader in the back. He heads up all of these meetings, right? He's like Tony Khan has final say. Tony Khan made Jericho the first champion, but I have it on good authority that Cody pushed for a secondary title and he pushed for himself to be the secondary champion, right?
I love it.
So here's how Cody is, right? And this is a story that was told to me. So
yeah, you,
if it's wrong, it's my fault for saying it out loud, but it's not my fault because it was what I was told.
But you've harped on him before here. You have.
Oh yeah. I definitely
have.
There are people in the industry who do not like Cody. And so that's where I get my information from.
There are people that do podcasts that do like Cody, and you're talking to one right here.
And there, I have no issue with Cody. Cody's been good to me. He's given me plenty of time.
It's the man.
So I have no issue with him. I'm sharing stories.
Yeah. Let's go.
Because you know I'm not a journalist. Somebody rumor and innuendo wise should be taking on the myth that Cody's this perfect individual.
Mm-hmm.
So the night that Cody and the Bucks and Kenny Omega used Ring of Honor for their proof of concept.
Oh yeah.
For Tony Khan to create the wrestling, where they used Ring of Honor, they used the NWA. So Cody wanted to beat Okada.
mm-hmm.
that night. And New Japan obviously said no.
Yeah.
Cody wanted to beat Kenny Omega, but Kenny Omega didn't want to do it. So about the eighth thing on Cody's list was, oh, well, Billy Corgan's involved because I think Billy Corgan paid for some things. I want to be the NWA champion. And that'll be a really cool moment, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And Corgan's like, yeah, let's do it. Cody Rhodes can be the NWA champion. Of course he can. So Cody wins, bleeds for the NWA championship, but won't bleed for Matt Taven in a first blood match. Has to bleed off in the fist, not on the head. But in this NWA title match on pay-per-view, yep, Gusher, right in the middle. So Cody wins the title, and then all of a sudden he's got a knee injury. How convenient.
You want to go up against Taven.
So drops the title back to Nick Aldis, 2 out of 3 falls, and then he's leaving the Ring of Honor territory. And guess what? He's got a knee injury. So he can only work one match. And that's his last match, which was Ring of Honor, their final battle show. Can't do jobs on the way out. So then he signs with AEW January 1st after playing Ring of Honor and the NWA and WWE, supposedly.
So some shady stuff there, huh? Is that okay? Well, you know what? If that's the case, then that's just how the cookie crumbles. But the fan in me, the narc in me here for AEW and for what, how the TNT title is building it up there, and you know, to have him as the inaugural one, I still think Lance Archer would have been a great one to start with. But the fact that you have it for Cody, I have no issue with that. But he's the guy that pushed it. It's political, and that's interesting stuff there, Jimmy. Doing all that stuff backing your way out of matches and doing shady things like that. It's a little dirty. That's dirty.
Yeah.
That's slimy.
Yep. That's what some industry people think of Cody.
That's okay. That's slimy.
And that's a story that was shared to me. I don't know if I've shared it before, but I just did. Yeah.
Well, I think I told you, when AEW was here in Boston back in October about the a good friend of mine, it's a camera guy. Cody gave him an interview. Remember that? I told you about that.
Of course. Yep.
He could not have been kinder about it.
We have had personal interactions with Cody. He's
charming. Yeah, great dude.
Mike, he's a salesman.
Yeah.
He's a salesman.
And it was interesting.
Okay, because we're fans.
Right.
And that's okay. That's perfectly acceptable. There are relationships that I have with people in the wrestling world or in the sports world.
Right.
And in life who are shady people.
Right. Right.
And that's, but if they treat me well, that's okay. But if I hear stories and I'm doing a wrestling podcast and it puts into question something, like that's the point of the wrestling podcast. It's not like everything is great. Everything I don't want to do. And I think our podcast is more positive towards wrestling.
Yeah.
But every once in a while we have to think critically on things. And there's a lot of things lately I've been thinking critically of, but that's for Jerry Callahan's podcast, not for this wrestling podcast.
Nice plug for him. Nice.
Yeah, and I love Jerry.
I will say this, though. It's funny you said that with the Cody thing, with the executive and all that stuff. He looked very executive at the end of the Dynamite this past week with Jericho and Tyson's altercation. You know, the whole roster comes out there, but here's Cody still in the suit and tie. And it's just like he's kind of the guy. He's the last one on camera to make sure Tyson gets backstage, no problem.
He leads the meetings, Mike.
He leads
the production meetings.
He had a freaking press conference.
By design.
And he had the press conference before the Double or Nothing, like the face of AEW. So it's just like he looked very figurative.
And that's what his dad did. That's what Dusty did. Dusty was the head booker.
Yeah.
He did all the creative, and he put himself in spots where he wasn't the champion for long, but he get it in there, and there's the whole Dusty finish.
I appreciate the Sid thought on that, but I mean, I'm 2/3 with him on the email, except the Cody thing.
Yeah, and so there's a story out there that when the Young Bucks were in TNA, they were told, we want you to be dressed like the Rockers, but not be the Rockers. So that's funny that he would make that comparison. Yep. Kenny Omega's best work hasn't been in AEW, unfortunate. I like Jericho. I think Jericho's done great work. Sammy Guevara, I've called him a tomato can. He's been better than that. Jungle Boy, we talked about it. MJF, we talked about. Darby Allin, we've talked about. Those are all fabulous, fabulous performers.
Yep. Up and coming.
Good Cody bashing. So SmackDown this week. SmackDown coming up this week. I'm interested in watching AJ Styles against Daniel Bryan for the Intercontinental Championship. AJ is now a permanent member of the SmackDown roster. So I think he's going to win, or Bryan's going to win, and AJ and Bryan are going to feud over the title, which I hope is a little bit better than their feud over the WWE Championship. But more importantly, Matt Riddle is moving from NXT to SmackDown. And when Matt Riddle lost to Timothy Thatcher in the first ever NXT pit fight on Wednesday night, as clean as he did, it felt like a move was going to be made. That felt like a leaving the territory loss, if I can use that term.
Yep.
And by the way, I liked the pit fight. It felt like if UFC worked a fight, right?
Yeah.
I loved the violence. I loved how Matt Riddle knocked Thatcher's teeth out conveniently right before commercial break.
Right.
Interesting how that stuff works, Mike Riley.
Yeah, interesting.
What do you think about Matt Riddle going from NXT to SmackDown?
Yeah, I mean, he was pretty much the hottest thing in NXT last year for a while, for a little period of time there. I think it's a really good move for him. You know, SmackDown has been the better show of the Raw and SmackDown to choose from, I think, of the two, to choose a 2-hour period there. And I think it's easy for him to, you could see him go for that Intercontinental title if it's going to be on SmackDown or whatever. You know, I think that would be the best case scenario for him to start. I think it's also convenient enough for him not to be on the same show as a Brock Lesnar, because, you know, everyone would be vouching for, fans at least, would be vouching for that match. And to keep those two far away, that would be, you know, that's probably what WWE wants to avoid. But I just want to talk real quick about that pit fight. I thought that was the best looking cage match I've ever seen in my life. Best looking cage match. Awesome setup. The shooting was great. Very good production. Good fight, too. And this, you know what, Jimmy? I'll go as far to say that this may have been the most important NXT since the pandemic, because you had a crowd there. Well, you know what I mean, an audience. And it was talent. It was guys that are in the development there for NXT, right? And they weren't told who to root for or whatever. They were just going so natural. Like, you know, traditionally the baby face that kind of had
you
their own.
You think that, Mike?
I just, listen, as...
You think that they didn't put up the cheer sign?
I am just telling
this
you.
This is Center Stage Atlanta. This is Universal Studios where they didn't say
Florida.
You cheer these people, or they didn't know who to cheer and who to boo.
I am going with the fact that they were all natural, and I love it. I thought that was fantastic. Listen, hey, don't make me believe otherwise, because
it's a work, bro. It's a work. There are a lot of things in this world that are work, bro.
You know what, Jimmy? I once believed in Santa Claus too, so I will still go with that there, and I don't care. I thought it was great. I love it. So I think this is the most important NXT since the pandemic here. They're a little late to the party with the crowd, but the fact you had that pit fight match a week before a pay-per-view, easy storytelling with all the other angles going into that pay-per-view. This was very good show for NXT this past week.
Just to all the kids who listen, I believe in Santa Claus, and Mick Foley, more importantly, believes in Santa Claus.
Well, I do too. I mean, I love Santa Claus. And we need Santa Claus more than ever in this world right now.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see Matt Riddle on SmackDown, and the expectations are high for him on SmackDown. I know people who I talked to when he was working in Evolve who told me that Matt Riddle is going to be a franchise performer at some point for WWE. And so this is the opportunity for Matt Riddle, who's got a legit background and has a connection, a really strong connection with the audience, as you could see at the Royal Rumble match. But I think he's got some political obstacles to overcome. One of which is Brock Lesnar. And so that's a match based on both Brock and Riddle's backgrounds that I want to see in the same way that I want to see Brock Lesnar work Bobby Lashley at some point. I feel like that's an easy one. I don't know that we're going to get either match. You know, Joe Murray texted us and mentioned Brock and Lashley at SummerSlam, which I'd love, you know, based on what's going on in Boston right now. SummerSlam's not happening here. Or if it is, it's an empty arena. Although if you read Kevin Paul DuPont's article in the Globe, it feels like the Delaware North company is trying to figure out how to get people into their building, which might be a sign of optimism for SummerSlam. But if the mayor's not on board with it, if Mayor Marty Walsh isn't on board with it, then it goes for naught. Because he seems to want to keep Boston closed until January 2021 at the earliest. And Baker does too. And there, there's team lockdown, right? And it's not lockdown the TNA pay-per-view from years ago where it's a double cage or a super tall cage. It's they want to keep us locked down. I don't know why. What do they know that I don't know? But anyway.
So wait, you want to see Lashley and Brock Lesnar? You want that, huh?
I've wanted to see that match for a long time, because because it's Lashley and Brock, when they have their working shoes on, they can work. I don't know necessarily that their styles totally match up. I feel like Brock and Bobby's best matches have been against lighter guys. But if it's going to be a car crash, I'm kind of interested to see the car crash.
So,
But I didn't think Goldberg and Brock at WrestleMania 33 in Orlando was going to be any good. And it's one of my favorite matches on that show. So I still keep that in the back of my mind as a positive potential, is that they'll figure out how to work the match.
They'll figure out a way. The buildup, though, I think they both suck in the microphone. So that's a major problem right there for a buildup to get me excited for it.
I just look at their backgrounds and their histories and the company. I want to see that because I'm kind of curious as to who they'd have win.
And they do have the size. The size is awesome. I'll give you that. But the microphone, that's something right there. I mean, obviously Lesnar would have Heyman speak for him, but is Lashley going to have someone, or is he going to throw him right in there?
MVP and Heyman could have good promos.
Okay,
then MVP is kind of talking for Lashley now.
Then fine, do that. Do that too. But they both kind of, you know, they've each had the bad guy persona for a while. And Lashley can be a face, he could, but Brock definitely would not be. So it's like, all right, good guy, bad guy.
If they do it at SummerSlam and there's no people, then it doesn't matter who's a good guy and bad guy.
Okay, all right, I'll give you that. Okay. But the benefit here for Bobby Lashley, Jimmy, it would be like a real prime time, probably the biggest prime time, with the exception of WrestleMania 23, for him, with the Battle of the Billionaires. That'd be biggest spot in his career, huge. So it would benefit him big time.
Would you be interested in seeing Brock Lesnar throw Matt Riddle around the ring?
No, but I'd be interested to see them both talk trash to each other.
And so then, I would too.
Yeah, the trash talking would be awesome because Riddle's great. Brock, you know, he's sneaky, good on that mic a little bit sometimes if you give it to him.
Brock, when he's invested, he can be good. And if he legitimately hates Matt Riddle, which we've seen or we've heard about, then it might be something. It might be a quickie match. It might be Brock tossing him around. But I'd be interested to see, because Matt's, let's see, how can I put this? Matt most of the time is under chemical enhancement.
Yeah.
So he might get in there and just say F it and see what he can do. And in which case Brock will be like, well, we'll put this fire out real quick.
Right, right. It could be like WrestleMania 32, him and Dean Ambrose.
Or the story that I was told was 31, Roman punched Brock in the face.
Right.
And Brock is like, okay, you want to play like this? And then Brock just beat him up, and that's where you got the point where Roman was just laughing at the in the corner because mm-hmm. he was getting like it wasn't Brock.
Well, it was also like
Roman. It was just Brock eating up Roman, and there's a difference.
It was like Brock and Braun Strowman when he punched him.
Yep,
you know
that's exactly what it was.
Same thing. He's not going to take that. So one guy, he would murder you any day of the week. And there's no chance in hell Matt Riddle would beat him. Nowhere.
No, I don't think so. But I'd be interested if they do the match.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned Braun Strowman there.
Yeah.
And I want to congratulate the family of Bray Wyatt on the birth of their second child. Mm-hmm. It looks like Bray's going to be off TV for a little while. And I find it interesting in a good way that more and more athletes are picking their family over work. I think that's a good thing. It's a good evolution of the world. Mm-hmm. Roman's family had twins, decided not to work WrestleMania this year, which I approve of that decision.
Yeah.
Braun Strowman, interestingly enough, is on an accidental Universal Championship run because of that. Roman's out. Braun Strowman comes in, beats Goldberg. Braun's first defense is against Bray Wyatt, not The Fiend.
Right.
Now we find out Bray had a kid on the way. So now Backlash is Braun defending against The Miz and Morrison. Mm-hmm. Braun's not losing the Universal title to Miz and Morrison.
No, that would be a shock if it did happen.
So while I don't believe in luck, I generally think luck is for losers.
Yeah.
Braun's had a strong Universal Championship run by accident.
Yeah, and
it's like the wrestling gods are making up for the fact that he should have beaten Brock Lesnar however long ago it was and didn't. And now it's like, okay, well, now you've beaten Goldberg. You've beaten Bray Wyatt, who was the hottest thing going until Goldberg stepped in. And now he's going to go on. He's going to have it for at least like 3 months.
So in the history books, yeah, he is the champion and all that. I asked myself the question, though, is there
also
like
a win over Goldberg is a big deal, Mike.
It is. It's a Hall of Famer.
That have happened.
No, in a Hall of Famer, short time, all that. But the other thing, though, is that without a crowd, is there going to be a scarlet letter there? Like, are you going to remember Braun Strowman as a Universal Champion when this is all said and done? So my point is, my argument is that I think it's most significant for him to remain the champion until you can get a full capacity back, because I think that'll be most instrumental for him.
So there are markers that you can determine whether somebody is favorable with the crowd or not. Mm-hmm. And I will go to WWE shop. I'll go to WWE auctions.
Yep.
I'll use those type of metrics because social media followers is a little misleading. Social media interaction is a little misleading. But so WWE does this thing where they sell plaques.
Yep.
The Braun Strowman WrestleMania plaque isn't there. So that means it's sold out.
Hmm.
Braun Strowman signed a belt for WWE auction. It went for $720. So the belt itself is $430. And then, $300 for the autograph, that's about what it should go for. Because mm-hmm. I've seen other belts, like the Viking Warrior Raiders signed a belt and it went for $400.
Yep.
So that's a sign that they're not necessarily over where somebody's going to, like the Charlotte NXT belt, it went for $2,500.
Yeah, that's...
A John Cena signed NWO belt went for $7,000.
John Cena NWO? Oh, from WrestleMania.
From WrestleMania. It was the replica belt, and okay. John Cena signed it with the NWO. It's a one-of-a-kind item.
It's kind
of
cool.
So it went for $7,000. Can you imagine?
Yeah, see, I mean...
$7,000?
Well, like
that's insane to me.
Yeah, I actually could. I would do it for someone. I would. But I don't know if I do it.
Undertaker, authentic WWF winged eagle?
Yep. I would also go with The Rock. I would go with Stone Cold. And, you know, you may have to go someone that's deceased. Macho Man.
Intercontinental.
Yep. Intercontinental. Even Ultimate Warrior. I don't know if I pay that for the Warrior, but Macho Man. Yep. Intercontinental without question. Roddy Piper, Intercontinental. That'd be a great one. I'd go Bret Hart, freaking Winged Eagle Authentic. Absolutely. Love that one. So that's, yeah. But the deceased ones are more difficult to get, obviously. And that's why I put the value up. So good for Braun. Good for him. He's cashing in.
Yeah. Braun's taking advantage of the situation. And interestingly enough, I don't think this was even a second thought for Bray Wyatt.
Yeah.
If you look at, he's on this hot run as champion.
Right.
Here comes Bill Goldberg.
Right.
Goldberg wins, and you can tell Bray's frustration because Bray Wyatt's a good performer. He doesn't look at that as athletic as he actually is.
Right.
Bray Wyatt sandbagged Goldberg on that jackhammer.
Oh, yeah.
Totally sandbagged him on it. Wanted it to look bad. And Bray Wyatt gets John Cena and gets a win over John Cena at WrestleMania and should be the Universal Champion again, but wasn't getting it. So,
right.
No Fiend. We're good.
Yeah,
we're going away for a little bit. We're gonna put together a kid.
Right. Hey, congratulations to Jose Offerman, grandfather once again.
I know, right? Jose Offerman. How about that?
oh, by the way, just before we move on with SmackDown, if I could just say this, I know this is not on the agenda, but what do you think about the Jeff Hardy thing, the drunk driving?
Don't love it.
Yeah, I hated it. In fact, I'm disgusted with it because it's a real life thing, and they've done this before. And it really infuriated me. And it brought back, I opened up an old wound on this, seeing the Road Warriors thing on Vice TV, the Dark Side of the Ring with Hawk and his trouble with it. And it's like, you just had a documentary on this 2 weeks ago. And now you know the trouble with what Jeff Hardy has had in the past. Do you have to bring in real life stuff here? Okay, the whole segment was taped. But everything that was going on Friday night, Jimmy, that you and I were discussing at length before we started recording here with the riots and these alleged protests, but they're riots in my book, not a good look for WWE here. Not a good look. And that's where I would have been maybe, you know, if I were Vince with his authority, call the audible and be like, guys, we can't air this here. Not a good time to do it, but maybe.
BPritchard@WWEcorp.com.
I don't like it, Jimmy. Don't like the move. Not good, Bruce. Bruce, I love you, buddy, but not good.
So here's what I'd say, and I'm joking. I don't know that that's his actual email address.
But just a lot of outlash on social media.
But they did this before. So Jeff Hardy just wants to get a paycheck and probably get out, right?
Right, right.
Because he's got 4 months left on his deal. I think they extended
Yeah, and maybe this is their way of saying screw you, kind of like how they did to Matt Hardy on the way out.
And what they're doing to Rey Mysterio now, which they're going to have a retirement ceremony because Rey may or may not sign. I don't know what Rey's doing.
Right.
I don't know that Rey knows what he's doing.
No.
But with Jeff Hardy, they played off of his drug problems years ago with CM Punk.
Yep.
And that was the focal point of CM Punk straight edge, Jeff Hardy is this drug abuser, and they brought that to the air.
Hate it.
Which I guess if the performer signs off on it, I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
If he's doing it against his will, so to speak, I'm not okay with it.
Exactly.
And that's kind of the difference.
I'll give you that. Yeah, if he did sign off on it, but just it's a dark look. I don't like it. Don't like
it. Yeah, it's not good. It's not a good look.
Yeah. I just wanted to get that out of my chest. Didn't like it.
No, this is what people, and Bruce has this issue too, right?
Yeah.
Bruce is in the, Bruce and Vince are, we make movies, pal.
Right.
Well, now you do.
Yep.
But when it was WrestleMania 3 and WrestleMania 4 and WrestleMania 5, those weren't movies. Those were wrestling angles.
Yep.
WrestleMania 6 was about Hogan Warrior title for title champion versus champion. WrestleMania 7 was the world events, which here's an interesting thing because I sometimes will go through the archives of Something to Wrestle and we're way off track and we're rambly tonight.
No, but whatever, it's interesting. Right? Who cares? We're fine.
So there, Bruce and Conrad, the mortgage guy from Alabama who saved Bruce's life and career, and Ric Flair's career and life, and paid off all of his debt and all this other stuff.
He's a godsend.
Conrad cannot be talked enough of in a good way about how he's helped the wrestling business for so many different reasons. Podcasting, StarCast, people who were irrelevant are now in prominent positions. Tony Schiavone.
Look at Jim Ross.
Jim Ross. Eric Bischoff got a WWF job, more recently.
Yep.
Because of Conrad and connecting him and Bruce and all that stuff.
Yep.
So Conrad's importance to the wrestling world cannot be overstated, especially within the last 3 or 4 years.
Yep.
And so that leads me to
with the storylines of you're going old school.
So making movies.
And
the reality of the world is I was listening to the WrestleMania 7 podcast. I'm sorry. And Bruce was talking about with Conrad about how WrestleMania 7, when they went to war, Sergeant Slaughter was an Iraqi sympathizer going against the Ultimate Warrior. Slaughter wins the title, the WWF title from the Warrior, and then goes into the Los Angeles arena as opposed to the Coliseum for WrestleMania 7. Hogan wins the title.
Right.
But
he was getting death threats.
The pay-per-view buy rates were down. Ratings were going down because America was actually at war.
Right.
Like in the middle of the Rumble pay-per-view, I remember watching it. They announced that George Bush, 92 Bush, which Google him and do some research on that Bush. he declares war during the show, and Gorilla and Piper do an on camera about it, and this is after Slaughter's won the title, and Vince and Bruce and WWF are all in on this angle now.
Yeah.
And instead of burning a flag leading into WrestleMania, they burned a Hulk Hogan t-shirt.
Right.
But what happened was people didn't want to see that.
No.
And so they tuned out. And so what I think has happened, because the real world got in the way of wrestling. So I think in the last, since March 11th, realistically, when Rudy Gobert touches everything, tests positive for coronavirus,
domino effect. Whole,
and that was the NBA essentially shut down the world. Yep. Right. That was the start of it. Was then March 11th.
Then it was March Madness the day after, and
ripple effect.
Exactly.
And so I think since March 11th, people are like, I don't really want to watch wrestling.
Yeah.
And thankfully, like, our podcast numbers have been really good.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Thank you, listeners. We love you.
I don't love all of you, but I like some of you. Love is a strong word.
I'm a man of the people.
Good for you. I'm not. I want to live in isolate. No, I don't. But the point is, Bruce is like, the world just didn't want wrestling then. And I think for a little bit of time, the world hasn't wanted wrestling.
Right.
And
Look at WrestleMania this year. 2 movies.
Well, they didn't want to pay for WrestleMania this year.
Right.
But they were fine with searching it on the internet, which they already paid for.
Yeah. Okay. But
so that's a long way of saying is that, like, interest in wrestling has been down as far as the casual fans go. And maybe now, because AEW and SmackDown's ratings Friday night were up. Maybe that we've come to the other side of this and we're getting to that point where wrestling is going to be back into the mainstream. And the ratings are going to go up because people are getting back to work. People are going about their normalcy in life again.
Yep.
And it's taken this long because, April, most people were at home at their dinner table at 5 o'clock.
Yep, exactly. And in bed by like 8.
And in bed by 8.
Yeah, there was nothing to do.
So now maybe we're on the other side of this.
Exactly.
That's a long way of getting there.
No, so. I like it. Yeah, that's good. Good PSA for the week. That's good, though.
No, my PSA is about be good to people and don't ruin somebody's storefront just because.
Exactly. Enough.
You know,
follow the lead of Dr.
Kim. We're recording right now, and we're in suburbs of Boston. But Boston is Boston is getting hammered right now.
It's turning into a war zone.
And it's not good. It's not a good look. There's a way to protest and there's a way not to protest.
Yep.
And whether, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this on the podcast.
Yeah, fair enough.
In Your House is coming up Sunday. Match I'm most looking forward to is Charlotte Flair versus everybody. It's a triple threat. It's Rhea Ripley. It's Ishira?
Io Shirai.
Do you know what, Mike? I actually spelt it out phonetically.
Yeah.
And I still screwed it up.
James, you're talking to a public address announcer. I'm happy to help you out with that. There you go.
I appreciate it. Mike, trust me. I need all the help I can get.
That's going to be a good match, though. It's going to be good.
So this is the match I'm most looking forward to. Charlotte is defending the NXT championship here. She won it over Rhea Ripley at WrestleMania Part 2. There was a ladder match. Rhea Ripley came back. Charlotte Flair is doing her dirty tricks. And I just feel like Charlotte's either going to lose this match without losing the fall and lose the championship and set up a rematch with whoever beats her, or she's just going to retain it and eventually lose it to Rhea Ripley down the road in the future. But I just have this vibe that Charlotte's going to SmackDown and Andrade's going to SmackDown because they're keeping couples together.
Right.
And it's just a feeling ever since Andrade lost the U.S. title to Apollo Crews, and Charlotte's been on SmackDown. I feel like that's a longer term play because they got to get those Fox numbers up.
Yeah.
And where we're getting back to normal, they're going to want to be closer to 3 million than 2 million viewers.
Right.
So I think Charlotte wins here and loses soon. But I also feel like Charlotte loses here without losing the title, without getting pinned.
Okay.
And that is straddling the fence like you read about.
Yeah.
But I don't think Charlotte is long for NXT. I think that was a failed experiment.
Experiment, and also with this whole pandemic, ratings and everything. And then Rhea Ripley, I think she had to go back to Australia too with the virus and all that. They wouldn't let her out for a while with the passport. Remember all that? I think there was some talk about that. So Charlotte just did what she had to do to be a company person. I think this match is really important for Rhea Ripley. You and I had a pretty good discussion about that a couple of weeks ago here. And it's almost like she's taken three steps back in a way after the dominant ending of 2019. And then again, I won't go down that rabbit hole again here, but
she looked good in the tag team match on Wednesday night. I thought she looked good. I didn't think she
was
in a tag team match at all.
Well,
they promoted her like Mara Renault's like, oh, she's as loud as a rock music or something to that effect.
But as a badass, like again, she didn't have to go after Charlotte. It didn't look good for her losing to Charlotte at WrestleMania.
It didn't look good that Charlotte ate her up. That was the issue.
Charlotte
took about 75-80% of that match. That's not Rhea Ripley's fault. That's Vince being like, oh, Charlotte is my franchise player, which Vince is right about. But that should have been more of a back and forth match than I think it was.
Right. And Rhea Ripley, if she is the badass here, she has to, you know, hold on to that title. Like, I'm the freaking woman here. I'm the best in the world. And I'm going to teach you, girl, who is the best. And that's where they failed on that, to not have her win. So my point is, if she doesn't win here, then it's really the three step back. That's my point. This match is crucial for Rhea Ripley. If she don't win here, then again, I don't want to go down this again with you, Jimmy, but you got to find a way to get a title on her immediately somehow. If it's not going to be NXT, throw her into SmackDown with Charlotte if she's going to go there and be that little villain, the person in the bad side of Charlotte. Hey, Charlotte, you may have got me in NXT, but now it's my turn to get you in SmackDown. Something like that. She just needs a title now to retain that, badass title she had, the role of a badass, I should say. going into the year 2020 because she's awesome. She's great. I mean, don't screw up. Don't screw anything up here with what you've built a foundation on Rhea Ripley, and they're in danger of doing that. So she has to win this match. Otherwise, put a title on her some other way if she ain't going to win this one.
Mike, how would you say Shayna Baszler has been on Raw?
Not good. Not good.
So you want to move Rhea Ripley, who's got
I know we've talked about
being successful
we
on
have
NXT
talked about this. We have
Raw.
Talked about this.
Because Shayna Baszler raises her hand and says, how am I being booked on Raw?
We have talked about this. We've talked about this. But I think there's a difference between the two right there. And Shayna Baszler has had her shot.
Yeah, Shayna Baszler is older, had a longer run on top of the NXT brand, has a legitimate. She was doing the Ronda Rousey gimmick better than Ronda Rousey was as far as the UFC fighter.
I am not looking about, you know, if you.
And so Rhea Ripley at 23.
See, that's where I disagree with you. If you're gonna put Rhea Ripley on Raw or SmackDown, I don't look at it as going to the main roster because all three of them are equal now. There's no hiding behind that. And if anyone disagrees, you're wrong. You're wrong because Charlotte Flair being where she was in Raw and then in SmackDown in NXT, that's equal. That's a level playing field. So if you're not gonna have her win in NXT, you gotta have her win on one of the other brands, and it's gonna happen now. So it's one or the other. You can't. She's gonna win here or one of the other brands. End of story.
So the unfortunate thing is, Mike, is that they're not all equal brands.
Well, I think they are. They've been told.
The misnomer is NXT. See, this is the detail, right? NXT is called the developmental brand, right? It's not the developmental brand. It's been the third brand, right? And it's a good third brand, right? Yep. But the way that it works is viewership and potential viewership. So SmackDown is one, Raw is two, NXT is three. There was a time where NXT was going to be the most important brand because it was going against NXT. It was going against AEW.
Yeah.
But the problem is after week one, when it's a million viewers on both shows or hovering around that million viewers, then it's like, okay, well, Kevin Owens wants to go to NXT. We're not putting Kevin Owens on NXT. We'll try Charlotte Flair there because it's the women's division. And I think that there's still a difference in that company with featuring the men and the women.
Well, you know,
I still think there's a thing there.
Yeah, but if they're
and so they'll put Charlotte on there and they'll cross her over three brands, but they won't put Triple H there, right? So when go back to Survivor Series, right? When William Regal said my door is opened for all the rosters to come in, who are the biggest stars on that roster? AJ Styles, Becky Lynch. It wasn't Triple H. It wasn't Brock Lesnar. So that gives you an indication. If NXT was really as important as they were telling you it was, and it's not, it's viewership and potential viewership and the numbers, it's the third brand, but it's not a developmental. There's a difference there.
Hmm.
If that Wednesday night show was important as they wanted you to believe when it was the Wednesday night wars, Brock Lesnar's on that show. Goldberg is on that show, all that. But when after the Saudi show, they loaded up that SmackDown in Boston, it was Goldberg. It was Cena.
Right.
Cena's on SmackDown. Goldberg was on SmackDown.
But
Brock Lesnar's first title match was on SmackDown.
And you don't want to put, but you would not be willing to put Rhea Ripley on SmackDown then right away, huh?
No,
you want to give her more development.
I want her to have the spotlight on her for longer in a different brand.
Well,
right?
if she's going to win the title here, fine. Keep her in NXT as long as you want. But if not, you got to move her. You have to. She has to she needs a title. If she's not going to win the NXT title, she needs to win the Raw or the SmackDown one sooner than later. She's got to go because you had something so special with her as a badass, as the top dog. Like going for the top there, and she needs to get back on that echelon. She needs it now. Rhea Ripley needs to be a champion expeditiously on any of the three brands. And I don't care. I don't care if you're going to look at NXT as a development. I'm not looking at it that way. They've told us it's not. It's supposed to be level playing field, and that's the way I'm looking at it. NXT is a level playing field as far as I'm concerned. You put Charlotte there, it's level playing field. There's no hiding behind it. I'm done with it. Done. It's not development.
Let's go back to booking the territories, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
So Bruce is booking, and Vince is the overhead of all of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
of course.
Keep that in mind.
He's the umpire, the emperor.
Bruce is on SmackDown, right? The SmackDown women's division right now is long-term teasing Bayley versus Sasha. Where does Rhea Ripley fit into that equation? The answer is she doesn't.
Hold on. Now that's if she loses. In my world, if she loses,
I'm playing the okay. game of you're taking Rhea Ripley from NXT and you're moving her first to SmackDown, right?
Okay.
So you've got the long play of Sasha versus Bayley.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they're going for SummerSlam in Boston, SummerSlam in empty arena. That's the long play there.
Go ahead, yeah.
Where does Rhea Ripley fit into that equation?
Yeah, it doesn't work.
The answer is she doesn't. She doesn't. So let's go to Raw. Let's go to the Raw brand. Nia Jax is being pushed. Why? I don't know. And we'll be interested to see if they show her beating up Kairi Sane, because that was taped and it was bad. It was really bad. And they've now banned the buckle bomb. Not because it's a bad move. It's because the execution of it has just been poor.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So Asuka's the women's champion there. So they being WWE, Paul Heyman specifically, has Nia Jax lined up and Shayna Baszler lined up, right? So those are the two plays right there. Asuka versus Shayna Baszler will be awesome. Should be awesome. So where does Rhea Ripley fit in there?
Wait till after the match. Wait till after they fight. Because of
Because
Backlash is a week after the In Your House. Okay.
Okay, so that's Nia Jax.
Yep.
So then the pay per view after that is July.
Have Rhea Ripley show up at Backlash a week later. You know? Have her show up a week later, interfere somehow, and then she's your next top contender right there. The overall point here is that don't screw up Rhea Ripley. Don't screw it up. And you're in very danger of that if you don't give her a championship immediately and to show why she could be the best in WWE. She needs something now. She needs to toss people around and say, I'm coming for your title. I'm coming for you, girl. Or I am going to be the champion, or I am the champion. It's one or the other. She needs to have that again. It's so crucial for Rhea Ripley to be at the top, and they can't throw this away.
Rhea Ripley needs to pin Charlotte.
Sure.
Decisively. And then a rematch, a one-on-one rematch, she needs to pin Charlotte again.
I have no issue with that.
And then she'll be up 3-1 in the series, which is what she'll come out better as, because she'll have 3 wins on Charlotte if it progresses like I say it's going to.
Yep.
And... God, that sounded so dinky.
No,
as I say, it would be if you progress like I'm a bigger a-hole than I actually am. If you progress the story out and my suggested story of Rhea gets 3 wins on Charlotte, then when Charlotte goes to SmackDown, does her thing, then you can come back to it. And Rhea, when she moves to Raw or SmackDown, wherever Charlotte is, she can come back and say, hey, I got 3 wins on you.
Mm-hmm.
So what now? And then you continue the story and Charlotte can be obsessed with getting those wins back.
Fine. No issue with that. Fine. If you're going to go that route, fine. We're in agreement that she needs to be at the top somehow.
Just not now.
That
is the point of our disagreement, Mike. That is the point of our disagreement is that... Mike, what you're looking for right now is you're looking for instant Rhea Ripley success as opposed to long-term storytelling, potential storytelling with Rhea Ripley.
Only because I think it's so crucial for her, because you had such a good character with the Survivor Series and, you know, everything, her momentum at the start of this year too. And I just felt like it was you know, totally destroyed, not totally destroyed, but in danger of totally being destroyed at WrestleMania. And you have to get that rebound right now. She's got to cash in now. So it's a big match for Rhea Ripley. And that's a very important one on the card, Jimmy. Very important match. Very curious to see how this all pans out next week in your house.
Huge match on the card. The other match that you want to focus on, the Keith Lee versus Johnny Gargano match.
Sure.
And we should talk about Cole versus Velveteen Dream. So, Mike, your thoughts on Keith Lee and Johnny Gargano?
Yeah, so just you look at Johnny Gargano. He can be a face. He can be a heel. He's been a great heel since NXT Portland, the turn there on Ciampa. And Keith Lee, a likable guy. But Gargano here trying to become the first ever two-time North American champion. And it definitely, I thought we may have had a mixed tag match with the whole the video that Keith Lee and Mia Yim had together there on Gargano and Candice LeRae. But these two are two great workers, Jimmy. I'm not going to go too long in this, but we know how good these two workers are here. Two awesome performers, very best of the best in NXT, and I think we're in for a good match between the two. I think Gargano needs the win more than Keith Lee, though, simply because he's the heel and he's just in NXT for the long run. I don't see him going to Raw or SmackDown. He's more of an NXT guy, and I could see Keith Lee making a run in Raw or SmackDown as a heavyweight guy. So this is where Gargano, I think, really needs a match. I think he will win, but I'm very excited to see these two work. So give me Lee and Gargano.
Gargano's premier worker.
Yeah.
He's top notch. He's punished because he's undersized.
Yeah.
I think Gargano cheats and wins. Mm-hmm. And then I think you see Keith Lee go to the heavyweight, the heavyweight championship. I mean, there are no heavyweight, but
Universal title,
after Adam Cole, short term, doesn't get it off of Adam Cole or Velveteen Dream if he wins. I hope he doesn't, but it's leaning that way.
Right.
And the reason why I don't want Dream to win is, I don't think he's proper for the championship right now.
Okay.
I want to see Velveteen a year from now. I think a year ago he was ready for it. I think he took a few steps back.
Yeah.
And also Velveteen needs a crowd.
Yeah.
So leave it on Adam Cole. That's my short little Adam Cole should win. Adam Cole's great. And yeah. I'd rather see Adam Cole versus Keith Lee than I would Velveteen Dream versus Keith Lee. But I think Keith Lee loses to Gargano. Lee does a program with Adam Cole.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lee ends up on Raw or on SmackDown.
He'd be a good fit on either show.
He'd be great fit.
Yep.
And hopefully that they can backtrack and capitalize on the momentum of Brock Lesnar being like, oh, when Keith Lee came out in the Royal Rumble, Brock Lesnar goes, oh, this guy.
Yes.
I'm interested.
Give me that. Give me
and
the
of
big
course,
voice.
Keith Lee's performance at Survivor Series where he loses in the end to Roman Reigns, but he's there at the end, which is the feature spot. So you have, in similar case to Rhea Ripley, Keith Lee had some featured moments on WWE big time pay-per-views.
Yep.
And so Keith Lee can succeed at that level. So, but he's got to drop the North American Championship to Gargano here. Did you have a thought on Cole and Dream?
Yeah, no, I'm with you too. Don't fix anything if it ain't broke with Adam Cole. Velveteen Dream, it's almost like the Roman Reigns where he should have won the Rumble the year before and did it the year after. Similar to that with Velveteen Dream, a year behind if he is to win. But yeah, I do agree with you. I know you don't like to hear that, but Velveteen Dream does need a crowd. And if you're not going to have it, don't waste it right now. Wait until you get the audience back because his entrance, his song, it's awesome. He's got a great pop when he comes out. And you know it'll be much better when you have a full audience here. Adam Cole, he's been good. Don't fix it if it ain't broke, like I said.
It's better for the show when we disagree, as long as we're not talking over each other obnoxiously. match of the week. My match of the week is October 30th. Comes to us from October 30th, 2016, Boston, Massachusetts, Hell in a Cell. We were both there for it.
Yeah.
Great Kevin Owens defending the Universal Championship against Seth Rollins in a Hell in a Cell. I mentioned this match a few weeks ago when we were debating Seth Rollins and the Kevin Owens program. I went back, I watched it because I was trying to think of, you know, we need more appreciation for Kevin Owens and how great he is. So this is the match that I came up with. We were there. I rewatched it. I felt like rewatching it back, and I felt this way at the time in the building. Mm-hmm. Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins were pissed they weren't the main event. Charlotte and Sasha Banks were the main event. Just a couple highlights from this match, the Owens versus Rollins match. Owens goes for a powerbomb. Rollins goes over the top, tries for pedigree. Owens gets out of it. They exchange super kicks, double clothesline, and then a suplex on the apron. Owens uses a fire extinguisher to blind the official, and then Jericho comes, and he pushes the ref who's helping the other ref into the cell with him, locks the door. 100% legal, 100% amazing. This was during the good part of the Festival of Friendship stuff.
Yeah,
Kevin Owens took a powerbomb from Seth Rollins over the top rope and threw two tables onto the outside of the ring.
Oh.
Rollins hits a 5-star frog splash, has the match won. The referee's on his way down for three. Jericho, who's still locked in the cage, pulls the referee out. The finish was strong. It involves Jericho and chairs and powerbombs. Really protected Seth Rollins well here, but it showed that Owens and Jericho were on the same page, and Kevin Owens' run as Universal Champion was one of my favorite title runs, but I'm a Kevin Owens honk. Outstanding match. 5 stars, Uncle Dave Meltzer. Would have been 8 in the Tokyo Dome, but it was in Boston, so it's only 5 stars. Mm-hmm. But good stuff. So it's Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins, Hell in a Cell in Boston, October 30th, 2016. Mike Riley, your match of the week.
I'm going to go back and watch that after we finish recording. I remember that. It was such a great night there. So, Jimmy, I don't know if you read up or saw or heard about The Undertaker talking about Hulk Hogan. Did you see those comments by any chance on ESPN?
I watched it today.
Okay, so there you go. So if you haven't, check it out. Undertaker, surprised, because I thought these two had a, not saying they still don't, but I thought there was a little more respect there for Undertaker to go out and make these comments about Hulk Hogan, you know, Hogan doing his back behind the scenes political stuff. But it pertains to Survivor Series 1991, when Hulk Hogan was the WWF champion, Undertaker full year into the Federation at the time, and he gets that push to the main event level there, beats Hulk Hogan. You and I did a watch along with this a couple of years ago at the Joe Louis Arena. Just when you do watch the match, just turn your volume up at the beginning. The Howard Fink intro. Oh, God, it's awesome. Howard Finkel, the intro, that's the way a ring announcer should be done there. It's just fantastic. And he just passed away a couple weeks ago. We talked about him. Unbelievable. But the whole backstory on it here is that Hulk Hogan said that his neck really, he was nervous about really hurting his neck with the Undertaker's tombstone. And the Undertaker, before the match, made it very clear to Hogan that he was a safe worker. He was not going to, you know, deliberately hurt him and all that. And hearing Bruce Pritchard talk about this many times before, one guy he said he would always trust to give him the pile driver would be the Undertaker and Jerry Lawler for that matter. And I think a lot of guys would say the same. But Hulk Hogan knew he was going to lose a title to the Undertaker. And I watched it here at the 1 hour, 25 minute mark. Undertaker tombstones Hulk Hogan, and Hogan complains after the match that his neck was really bothering him. Well, this is before the chair one, but after that 1 hour and 25 minute mark there, James, Hulk Hogan got up and I did it. 1-1000, 2-1000, boom, he's back up and throwing punches at the Undertaker. No problem. Didn't look like no pain to me there, Hulkster. Undertaker protected your ass. But of course, Ric Flair does come down to ringside. And Hogan knocks him out, but then Flair gets back up, puts the chair there. Undertaker again, tombstone, you know, on the head of the chair of the Hulk Hogan there, but didn't even touch it. It was a country mile away from hitting the chair. Hogan sold it well, good seller walking out in pain. But what Undertaker says, he was on Vince's office floor after complaining about it. What happens 6 days later? Undertaker loses the title at Tuesday in Texas, which then leads to the Royal Rumble 92, where the belt is vacant. Ric Flair wins. Hogan goes to WrestleMania 8, not in a title match, leaves. Undertaker wasn't champion for another 6 years after. Did he have to be? No. But he did his job. He has all the respect in the world from every performer that he's worked with. It seems like it's political BS on behalf of Hulk Hogan, if you ask me, because there's a little track record there, even with the Bret Hart stuff, not too long after that, WrestleMania 9 and other stories down the line, too. Very disappointed to hear this. There's always two sides to every story. But in this one here, I'm a little pissed off at Hulk Hogan. So go and watch that Survivor Series 91 match, where I don't think Hulk Hogan hurt his neck at all.
So Hulk's losing.
I threw a lot at you.
No, there's a lot there. The Undertaker thing on ESPN was great. His conversation with Bill Simmons was great also. The docuseries has been great. I can't wait for when they run them in June.
Yep. Next week.
So there's a lot to this Hogan story. Hogan goes to Taker before the match, says, "My neck's bothering me, brother."
Yep.
Undertaker goes to Hogan the Tuesday in Texas before. And Undertaker describes himself as being unsure of how to react because he's seen it. And he's, in your words, a country mile from the chair. And Taker goes up to him about it. And Hogan says, "You had me too tight there, brother." And Taker just knew then. And of course, because I critically think about most things, if Hogan's got a neck injury, why are they doing a rematch 6 days later?
Yep, there you go. Because
if Hogan is as hurt as he says he was, and in Vince's office with the paramedics, like, it's one thing to be selling in the ring, and I bet if you did the timer, Hogan was in the ring 10 minutes ish. It was around 10 minutes. I bet if I went back and put the clock on it.
Are you talking Tuesday in Texas or Survivor
Series? No, the Survivor Series match.
13 minutes.
13. Thank you.
13 minutes. Yep.
13 minutes. Hogan's on the ground after the Undertaker tombstone that missed him by a country mile because, as Hogan told Taker, "You had me too tight, brother." But Hogan's healthy enough 6-7 days later to be in the same ring with the guy.
Yep.
To win the title.
The dots don't connect. Doesn't connect.
A lot of dots don't connect these days.
No.
They didn't connect then. They don't connect now.
Yeah. And then so just political.
Just whenever you're watching something, think critically and be smart, brother.
Exactly. Yeah. So it made me, again, two sides to every story. But I'm going Taker on this one, man. That made me mad. And again, really surprised he did say that because there seemed like a lot of respect between the two. Hogan had him in the Suburban Commando movie. Not too long after that, or even before, right around that time, they had another feud in 2002 where Hogan dropped the title to The Undertaker. That was the last time Hogan was WWE champion, and he lost to The Undertaker.
Who, ironically, Taker didn't want to work with Hogan. That was the summer where nobody wanted the belt.
That's right. The undisputed title. That's right.
Yep. So, nobody wanted that belt. Was a hot potato because it went from Hunter to Hogan to Taker, Taker to Rock to Brock.
Exactly. Yep. It bounced around. So it's my favorite title design too. There you go.
That undisputed one is?
Yeah, right there. See it?
Okay.
I love it.
Whose signature is on that one?
Nobody. Nobody yet. No one yet. And that in the U.S. title, the only one that are not signed yet. So,
fair enough.
It's coming, though. It's coming soon. We'll see.
Mike Riley, do you have a Riley round?
Let's do it. You ready to go?
Yes.
So, James, since the pandemic, AEW, NXT, Raw, and SmackDown, which show have you been most invested in?
AEW.
Yeah.
All Elite Wrestling has gotten me most weeks, and it's because I don't know there are some times where I think I know what's coming next and I'm not sure. They had the debut of Matt Hardy. They had Brody Lee.
Yeah.
FTR. The Jake Roberts promos have been great. Taz had a great promo. And while I'm not a fan of Brian Cage, Yeah. The fact that he's got Taz as a mouthpiece is tremendous.
Yep.
So the Tony Schiavone, who is reminding me how much I love Tony Schiavone as a broadcaster.
Awesome.
Him and Jericho were great on commentary.
Yep.
So I think AEW has gotten me.
Yeah, it got me fast too. Once they put the crowd in right away, they figured it out. And I think that has been the best of the four. Again, with no crowd here. That's why I asked the question on
even
that.
Even with Cody's Weasley bookings.
Speaking of AEW, they are coming out with wrestling figures this summer. You know, you've seen those commercials and everything. It's kind of a two-part question here. Were you a wrestling figurine collector?
Yeah, I had the rubber ones with the Hogan and the Big John Studd and Tito Santana and the One Man Gang.
Yep.
I think I repainted the One Man Gang to be Akeem.
Nice. Love it. Okay. So did you have a favorite one?
I don't think I had one of the I had the white and red Hogan. So maybe that one, because I was a huge Hogan fan.
Yeah.
I like the ones with the movable arm.
Oh yeah.
Like the Axe and Smash one where they had the open hand and the press slam.
Yep.
You know, the Warrior one.
Sure, sure.
Probably was one of them.
Yep.
But yeah, I had them. I still every once in a while, you know, I think Funko Pops are now the new action figures.
They're really cool.
But in my basement, I've got a box full of old action figures, and I'm sure at my parents' place, they have all my rubber figures in the ring and the cage and all that stuff.
They got them all there. Yeah. I was, like early 90s, I was a collector, but then like, you know, I don't think I kept them. I think I just kind of threw them out or whatever. But then when the Jax ones came out in the late 90s, I really got back into those there. Love those. And now going to the Comic Cons and everything and seeing them that are being sold that you can't buy anymore, I try to buy them in the box still and then maybe have them sign them. So my favorite one that I had personally was The Rock. I love that one. He had the WWE title around him and the Undertaker one with the purple. Love that one too. That was my favorite. My two favorites right there. All right, final question here. It's always asked, and I know you're not a big fan of the Mount Rushmore, but this is not a question for your Mount Rushmore of wrestlers. I want your Mount Rushmore of favorite wrestlers. Four. Go ahead.
All-time favorite wrestlers. I would say Bret Hart. I would say CM Punk.
Mm-hmm.
I would say Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there's no Hulk Hogan, there's no me as a fan, so I have to go there. So Hogan, Bret Hart, CM Punk, Charlotte Flair.
Wow. Okay. Those are good.
Those are my four favorite all time, I think.
Good. Okay. Yeah. I went Undertaker, Bret Hart, Stone Cold, The Rock. Those are my four favorites. Not the best, but favorites. You know,
favorites.
Had to change it up. So there you go.
Do you know who I have omitted? So I have to take somebody out.
John Cena, right?
Nope.
Really?
Who's my favorite wrestler of all time?
Oh, Mick Foley.
Yep.
So who would you take out there? I'm going to guess you're going to take Bret Hart.
So I'm going to take out Hulk Hogan.
You're taking out? You see, I turned you against him after the Undertaker thing.
No. Even though, like, if there's no Hulk Hogan, who was one of my favorites growing up.
Yeah.
See, Bret Hart was my first poster.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I might have to take out CM Punk.
Wow. So would you then go Bret, Hogan, Charlotte,
Foley? So I have to, if Foley is, I feel like I'm in a therapy session right now. So if Foley is my favorite wrestler of all time, he's got to be one.
Yeah.
So Foley, Bret Hart was the first poster on my wall.
Okay. Was he wearing the Intercontinental title?
He was wearing the Intercontinental Championship.
Yeah. Love it.
Hogan was the reason. Hogan was the attraction that got me into wrestling.
Yep.
And for the sake of the podcast, Charlotte has to continue to be my favorite, and I have to be overly obnoxious about her and her success.
So it's a work. Okay, I get it.
So the fourth one is a variable, but you know, for the sake of the podcast, I'll put Charlotte in there fourth. Okay. And Charlotte is a favorite, and I've discussed why in the past.
No, of course, that's cool.
There'll be more reasons when I write my book that nobody will read.
Well, after our pre-show conversation, I am definitely on board to write the foreword for you on that. I think it was inspiring stuff with what we've discussed.
No, it's just when I say be critical of everything.
Oh, it's great.
Question the story that's being presented to you. And this goes for this. Here's the PSA, right?
Let's go.
When you see something, always ask why it's happening, what's the agenda at hand, and be critical in your thought. There's the internet. Search out your questions, because maybe somebody else has those questions. And everybody's instincts are usually pretty good about certain things. But it's all about like how you're conditioned growing up as to whether you accept the story as presented to you, or if you're going to be critically thinking about what are the logic holes within the story. It's very similar to wrestling. You can do stories that make sense, or you can have stories that don't make sense. There's a lot of things in the world right now that don't make sense to a lot of people. So think critically as to why they are happening and what's happening. And if there are inconsistencies in the story, you have to wonder what agenda you're on.
I like it.
And I think that's putting it as neutrally as possible, because I don't want to alienate somebody by being like, this is right because of this political leaning, or it's not, because I don't know.
Yeah. But
I work within the media, Mike. You work within the media.
Right. But it's words of wisdom.
And I know at times how filthy the sports media can be.
Oh, yeah. Try going to the news, too.
I always question if the sports media is as filthy as I know it to be, how dirty is the news media?
Oh, yeah. Seen it firsthand. It's there's some shady things there sometimes. There can be. And you and I know a lot of people that work in the news, too.
Yep.
So they can tell you a lot, too.
What agenda are we on?
That's right.
So that's going to wrap up this week's agenda for wrestling.
Hey, just remember, folks, wrestling fans, the next two Sundays, turn life off. We have two pay-per-views coming up the next two Sundays. So get excited. You got In Your House. You have Backlash. You know what? Make the most of it. Make the most of everything. Turn off reality. There's a lot of shady things happening in the world right now, bad things and so forth. Just enjoy what we have here right now, because we don't know when things will get back to normal. But the fact that we have this outlet to be able to, you know, have our own little paradise, embrace it.
And when I said 60 minutes at the start of the show, I really meant 90 minutes. Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. For Mike Riley at Sarge985 on Twitter, the show's Twitter account is at WrestleCast985. My Twitter account is at IamJamesStewart. Everybody, be safe in the world, hug the ones you can, FaceTime the ones you have to, and try to be good to people. Try to be good to each other.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
There's always a reason for better health, and here's Carlo with his.
My program with Awaken 180 actually started when my daughter was born, and at that time, I was over 300 pounds. I felt I owed it to her to better myself and my family, of course. And I'll never forget, it was my fourth week. I came in and my goals for that week were not met. And they found the positive in everything. And that was the biggest thing for me. Awaken 180 has provided me confidence, not only in my day-to-day eating, it's my day-to-day role as a father, as a friend. And that's something that for the longest time, I didn't have.
The benefits are endless after losing weight with Awaken 180. Carlo dropped his 84 pounds, and he did it in under 4 months. Scale results, life results, with the solution for weight loss online at awaken180weightloss.com.
The Dave McGilvery Finish Strong Foundation's goals are to inspire and empower youth across New England and beyond to increase physical activity, expand literacy, and build community and self-esteem through running, reading, and performing acts of kindness. Join us in our mission to empower youth through fitness and education. With your support, we can provide the opportunities for youth to cross their own finish line one step at a time. Together, we can build a stronger, healthier future. Go to DaveMcGilveryFoundation.org for more information.